The Squawker Talker is sponsored by betonbrazil.com. It's the betting site for all sports punters with great odds, markets, and offers. Listeners to this podcast can now get up to £60 deposit matched when you use the promo code Squawker60. Just visit betonbrazil.com and enter the promo code Squawker60 when you deposit, and we will match your deposit up to £60. Also, look out for our daily happy hour offers between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. Sign up now at betonbrazil.com. Bet on Brazil is for over 18s only. Betting should be fun, so please gamble responsibly.
Welcome back to the Squawker Talker. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and joining me today to discuss the preview of a big weekend in the Premier League and some goings on in midweek in the EFL Cup is Ollie Young-Miles. How are you doing, Ollie?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm not bad. James McManus is back again.
Cape Crusader. Thanks for having me.
You're not wearing a cape today.
I don't know, it's a pretty big shirt, isn't it?
So, yeah, that'll do.
We had some effects going on in here, a bit of wind.
Speaking of effects, we've got freelance football writer extraordinaire. Greg Lee's here. How are you doing?
I'm good, yeah. Ready to bring the external effects to the pod. Yeah.
Do you wear capes or any kind of other trinkets of the Super Bowl?
Only my days off, really, so not today, I'm afraid. But fair enough. Maybe on my second appearance, we might.
By day, football writer. By night, caped vigilante, maybe.
Yeah, you said it.
I did say it. Shall we move on? So the big game of the weekend is between two EFL Cup semi-finalists. You might have heard of them. Man United versus Liverpool. They were both in action against Hull City and Southampton, respectively. United got a win at home at Old Trafford. Liverpool didn't exactly meet expectations when they lost away at Southampton to a Nathan Redmond goal. Could have been a lot more if the Englishman had his shooting boots on, missed a lot of chances. Could have put the tie to bed, Ollie. But, I mean, who needs to win this game more, as things stand? Liverpool are shooting for the title race. United need to get into the top four. What do you think this fixture means to the two teams?
It's a game that both of them need to win, really. They're both, you know, sort of, they've both been in great form over the past 10 games each. United haven't lost in their last 10 Premier League games. Liverpool have lost one. So they head into it in good form. Obviously, with the history of the fixture, it's a massive game anyway. But the fact is, Liverpool need to claw back some of that ground on Chelsea, and United need to make up ground on the rest of the top four. So it's a huge game. And yeah, they'll both be going for it, I think, especially Liverpool after their poor performance, as you said.
Mm. James, I mean, United and Mourinho are on their best run of form since 2009. 9 wins in a row, unbeaten in 15 games. But are Liverpool the first real test of quality they've had in this run?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, there's a great run United are on, but there's still very much the sense that they're trying to claw back a bit of lost time from earlier in the campaign. Secretly, though, Liverpool's form has dipped. Back-to-back games without a goal, missing Mane already. I think there's been an over-reliance on a first 11, so a lot of the players coming in now are a bit undercooked, underprepared. Any other cooking analogy you want to put in as a crossover? But Emre Can looked awful against Southampton, so ponderous and delaying, taking 8 touches when he should just be moving the ball on. Milner and Klein looked absolutely spent. Stretched all game by Southampton. So it's a very different proposition to the game at Anfield where Mourinho just parked the bus again and it worked. Mm. It was an obvious tactic, but it's a good one. And when you're as good as he is at doing defensive coaching, it works. But you have essentially got the best attacking coach in the league going up against historically the best defensive coach in the league. But it's at Old Trafford, so United can't really sit back.
Mm. Greg, there will be a demand for a more expansive approach from Mourinho. But do you think that the criticism of his approach at Anfield, where he kind of set up to completely nullify Liverpool's game plan and hold out for a 0-0 draw, do you think the criticism was valid or a bit overplayed?
I think I can, looking back now, and United obviously in good form at the moment, but when you think back to that draw, they really weren't. They were dropping points at home. I think they probably couldn't afford to lose that game at Anfield. So I think it probably was fair. The criticism's always going to come in those games, especially when that game itself was quite hyped up as a potentially really big and entertaining spectacle. Mm. Didn't turn out like that. But as you say, I think now the fact that they're at home and also the fact that United players a lot more confidence now, you'd feel, after this winning run, then I think they won't play the same way at all. And I guess it'll be borne out if United can win here and then they've got a draw at Anfield, that's a good return for the season. So a lot of it will depend on how this weekend's game goes.
Mm. I mean, if this was a cup tie, a win at home, a draw away, that would see the side through. But Jurgen Klopp there, James said that he's the best attacking coach in the league. And Liverpool, even with their poor form, are top of the table for goals scored and chances created. But, I mean, how much are they going to miss these individuals we're talking about, like Mane, and also Coutinho and Henderson could be rushed back. For a team that we often talk about having this system, they are very reliant on individuals, aren't they, Ollie?
I think Mane's huge for them, obviously, this season. Statistically, he's been very impressive. He's got 9 goals and 4 assists in 19 games, but I think he's the type of player that, you know, his off-the-ball movement and his pace is something that you can't really quantify in stats that much. His take-ons, you know, you can sort of put in, he's completed 47 take-ons. But I think he just gives that Liverpool side an edge, you know, in the final third with that pace and that movement. And with players like Coutinho and Firmino floating behind him, he can be really devastating for them. And they don't really have a like-for-like replacement for him. They've got Origi, who's quick, but he's not really an out-and-out wide man. And I think we saw in midweek as well, Sturridge looks well off the pace. So, yeah, it's going to be difficult for them. I think Coutinho has to play, really, considering they don't have Mane and considering Sturridge is looking so, you know, sort of, he just doesn't fit into that side at all. And I think they do need to bring Coutinho back in.
James, do they have to change the way they're playing to accommodate other players instead of Mane? Then we saw Klopp go to a 3-5-2 actually against Southampton. Didn't really work. Is it going to have to be a change of system to get around this problem of not having Mane to play?
I mean, as Ollie touched on, the squad does have quick players, but it's been hindered playing the 4-3-3. One, by Mane leaving to the African Cup of Nations, and two, Lallana's form in a deeper role. Usually you push Lallana forward to a front three, and that would make sense. Like, that's a good move. But he's playing so well there, there's not really any other attacking player you can move there. Sturridge isn't a wide man. Repeatedly said he hates playing there, and he's just getting bullied every game he plays. I mean, he's lost a yard of pace, Sturridge has as well. Henderson is arguably a bigger miss than Mane for me. He's the best number six in the league, Jordan Henderson. He has been this season anyway. And Liverpool just have ponderous control, I would call it, against Southampton. There's a lot of sideways part. There's no real urgency in the tempo whatsoever. And Liverpool do have that to an extent when Henderson plays, but Liverpool just seem to concede so many more chances and attempts on their goal when Henderson doesn't play. And I think if he's not fit for the United game, it's a huge loss, a huge advantage for Man United. Coutinho will play. He was ushered back in against Southampton about 65 minutes gone, which always seemed like the plan no matter what the score. So he'll play.
Fair enough. I mean, Henderson being out, does that open the way for Pogba to re-dominate this game, Greg? I mean, we've seen in the past, as you said earlier, the United versus Liverpool hasn't always lived up to the spectacle. But in years gone by, players like Steven Gerrard, even going back further, Brian Robson, really got their teeth stuck into this fixture. Do you think Pogba can take another step to defining himself in this new Man United team against Liverpool at Old Trafford?
Yeah, definitely. I think his form, like his teammates, has improved recently. He's been playing much better. I think United are slowly getting the best out of him now with the setup they got in midfield with Carrick and Herrera, kind of providing that balance behind him. So I think if you don't pick out one player who could potentially dominate this game and really write himself into the headlines, it probably is Pogba, yeah, especially with, as we're saying, Henderson being out. Liverpool, obviously, when you can run at that back four, you're still not fully kind of trusting them at the moment. I know sometimes they have got some clean sheets in the last couple of months, but you still kind of look at that and worry. And if Pogba is the type of player who can do so much, can't he? He can kind of get on the ball, he can drive forward quickly, power, pace, but also the technical stuff as well. So I think he's the guy you'd look at for United, yeah, definitely.
Just a side effect of Pogba playing so well is his link up with Zlatan. And if I was a Liverpool fan, I'd be very worried about seeing Zlatan against Klavan.
Matip is also another potential big miss because he's a bit like Henderson and Coutinho. He's in training, but rushing him back when he's not fully fit could be a risk as well.
And like Matip's he's not the quickest either, so it might suit him. It'd be great if Liverpool had Matip back, but Klavan against Zlatan, Pogba being given the space to dictate, that's a very, very dangerous combination for Liverpool.
With Henderson being missing, Ollie, do you think, well, likely to be missing, given his injury status at the moment, do you think Carrick will play, or do you think Mourinho will feel at Old Trafford, he can go a bit more bold, he can play with Herrera and Pogba in a two, and maybe push another player forward? Maybe Wayne Rooney could come in. He was subbed off early against Hull in midweek.
I think he will play Carrick. I think there's no real need to take him out of the team. With Carrick at the base of that midfield, they can really dominate, especially with Henderson missing. And he just gives, as Greg said, you know, he gives them that balance. He gives Pogba license to get forward, and Herrera just sort of does his running next to him. So I think this is kind of fixture that suits him. He can get on the ball, start moves off, and just sit there and protect the back four, which is what he's been doing all season. And him being in the team regularly has obviously coincided with United going on this big run of form. So
there's been a lot of talk about his future in the team. He is an advanced age for a regular starter in a Premier League team, it's fair to say. But the bigger question we've actually had in from Twitter from Clinton Spell asks, Mourinho's future at United, is he going to stay for the long term the way things are going, or could he repeat the same problems he had at Chelsea and other clubs, James?
Yeah, they've followed him around his whole career, club to club. It's not a coincidence. He builds sides up. He's done it again here. He's reverted to type, hasn't he? He's brought older, experienced heads in. He doesn't plan for the future per se. Rashford's been sidelined. He's the future. Zlatan, a 34, 35-year-old, has been signed to replace him. So it's all built up for the short term. He wants to win something at United. He's all about trophies. And I think you could tell last season when Chelsea were going in such a poor run of form, it kind of twigged in him that he wasn't this legacy-building manager. And he seemed so disheartened in post-match press conferences and interviews. He's a bit like, he's not the Ferguson figure he wanted to be and wanted to become at this age. But I think now he kind of accepts what he is a bit more. And he's a 3-4 years, I'll win you something and then I'll move on.
Mm. Greg, you've been covering Chelsea and a lot of other London clubs a lot. Do you see a difference? Do you see that, like that if he's twigged it, has he twigged it that he's not that guy? Or do you think you've seen enough at Old Trafford that maybe he's learning from his past mistakes? United are playing with a kind of a stylish type of football maybe people didn't expect from Mourinho at the moment.
Yeah, possibly. I think he probably wants to be that guy who can now cement a legacy somewhere, because he's kind of running out of clubs. If you look around Europe, he's either been there or he's been to their big rivals. He burnt bridges kind of wherever he's gone. Had great success as well, of course. So I think United has always been held up as his dream job, where he wants to be. So I think he would love a long-term stay. It's just his methods in the meantime that win the trophies, they often guarantee that kind of level of that tension and disruption. And even this season, they are doing much better now. But there has been incidents with Luke Shaw. There's been kind of media stuff where he's been very tetchy and that the usual signs that we saw at Chelsea. And as long as he keeps winning, that's fine. But whether in the long term that will do damage to his long term prospects of a stay there, you do worry.
I just think it's interesting with Mourinho. He's the sort of manager that takes the League Cup very seriously. A lot of managers don't really do it, but you can see it both his spells at Chelsea. It was the first trophy he won in English football, and it was the first trophy he won back at the Bridge, and he's taken it very seriously with United. It seems like he wants to get that first trophy on board, get that winning mentality at a club, and then hopefully add two or three more, and then that's it. You know, his job's sort of done. Mm. I think, you know, he wants to get United back on a footing that they were at under Ferguson. You know, this was a big job for him, in taking United from, you know, a position that no one expected them to really be in to back at the top of the game. I think once he's achieved that, he'll walk away.
He'll walk away?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if he can do that in 3 or 4 years, then, you know, he's re-established United as a force. I think that will prove, you know, why they hired him in the first place.
I think Mourinho's got a bit of a pass this season. He's not expected to really win anything, but if he doesn't get top four, then he's immediately under pressure to deliver a trophy next season, which top fifth to a title challenge is a big leap. So he needs to finish top four this season. Mm. And I don't think Man United will.
It's kind of hard to look at who will at the moment. I mean, there are literally this year six top four teams in a way. Mm. It's very, very awkward trying to cram them all in. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens. But before we move on away from Man United versus Liverpool, which could be one of the decisive fixes to decide the complexion of the Champions League spots come the end of the season, I want to know, let's build a combined 11, if we can, as a podcast room. I'm going to come to each member of the pod one by one. I'm going to give you a position, you're going to give me a name, and we're going to see how it looks at the end. So, Ollie, you're going to start us off goalkeeper. I doubt there's going to be a shock here.
Yeah, it's got to be De Gea.
Oh, you're going with De Gea? I
want to recount on that one.
So you've got De Gea in goal. James, left back?
You always do this. You go right back, left back.
Yeah,
left back, right back.
It's right first.
It's right to left.
Oh, yeah. We're having a meeting.
Right to left, yeah.
Are you Dimitri Payet in me? Okay, we'll go right back then.
Nathaniel Klein. That's why I wanted that one.
Oh, very nice. Right-sided centre-back then, please.
Right, Brian. I'll go for Eric Bailly.
He is at AFCON, so you can't actually have
him. Okay.
Sorry, it's form and fitness, I must say. Could start this weekend.
Right, okay. Chris Smalling.
Wow.
Ooh,
left-sided centre-back, please, Ollie.
Matip.
Very nice. Which brings us to left-back, James.
James Milner.
Brilliant. And now this is quite an interesting one now, because we could either do 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3.
4-3-3.
A lot depends on your first midfield pick. The deepest player, who's it going to be, Greg?
Michael Carrick.
Michael Carrick, it sounds like we're going
4-3-3. Henderson's been robbed there. Absolutely robbed.
You can still get
is
in.
He playing, though?
Who should play at number six, then?
Number six. I don't really like that term.
Okay, we'll use a different term. Ollie, you've got the next midfield pick. Who's going to go for it?
I'll go with Lallana just because I love him.
Lallana. Well, yeah. So you're going to have to get the man in the middle there.
I have the power in my hands. So, I can leave out Paul Pogba and get
Pogba
much
or like, Henderson, basically.
We've not picked Ander Herrera yet, have we? No, Paul Pogba. Obviously.
I was going to say.
You're like, I'm going to have to edit that bit out. He did mention Pogba.
So we've got Carrick holding the fort while Pogba and Lallana do things. That sounds pretty magical.
That's a very solid midfield.
Actually. So I guess to stick with the orthodox we're going for, right wing. Remember, Mane is at AFCON.
Yes, so I'm going for Henrik Mkhitaryan.
Oh. Choice
pick. Classic choice.
Centre forward, Ollie.
Zlatan.
Left wing, James. Is Coutinho going to make a late move from injury?
He does, yeah. He's better than Martial. Coutinho.
Beautiful. So that's it. Listeners just tuning in. That's De Gea in goal. Klein and Milner down each side on the fullbacks. A centre-back pairing of Chris Smalling and Joel Matip.
Yeah.
Michael Carrick in the holding role with Lallana and Pogba ahead of him. I want to see that, actually. That sounds amazing. Then Coutinho and Mkhitaryan on the flanks. Again, that sounds magical. All behind big, bad Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I mean, that sounds like a team that could win titles, doesn't it, Ollie?
That front six is outrageous, isn't it?
That back four ain't much, though, isn't it?
So, yeah, fun to watch, though. Fun to watch. A team I'd like to see, anyway. But two players we didn't mention there were Wayne Rooney and Daniel Sturridge. I mean, Wayne Rooney is United's captain. He's one goal up becoming their record all-time goal scorer. Daniel Sturridge is still arguably Liverpool's most naturally gifted finisher. Neither of them in the teams. What's going on there, Greg?
I just think it's a case of, I think with Rooney, there are better individuals at United now in that creative role that he likes to play at number 10 or up front with Zlatan now. I think Rooney's not realistically going to get past any of those. But Liverpool, I think Sturridge, ability-wise, definitely is in their best 11, but it's more of a system issue there, and he clearly doesn't really have the desire or the ability to play that high-octane style of football, which involves, if you look at someone like Firmino, as well as his contributions on the ball, it's also all the work he does off it, and I think that's equally valuable to Liverpool under Klopp. As it is putting the ball in the net. But I mean, it's a great option to have off the bench. If Sturridge can come on, you know there's not many players that a chance will fall to who would do a better job of it than him. So it's still a good asset for Liverpool. But yeah, I think it's more the system that lets him down at the moment.
James, we saw a little bit of a resurgence from Sturridge a couple of weeks back, you could say. He was scoring goals again. It looked like he could be that guy who's going to step up while the other key players are missing. But was that a bit of a false dawn?
Perhaps. He looked very, very rusty against Southampton. He was bullied by Van Dijk the whole game. I do think he's lost a yard of pace. All these injuries have taken a toll. Probably a crucial time in his career, crucial age where you don't really want to be out injured a lot, 25, 26 period if you're a striker. I think his time at Liverpool, he's gone in the summer, I think. I think Klopp's had a long look at him. He knew he was a fan favourite. He knew he'd have to slowly retract him from the starting 11. He's built a team that doesn't really need him, that's moved on without him now. And I think, West Ham are just dying for a striker. So there'll be a £30 million offer, I'm sure, in the summer from someone like West Ham. He'd be good for Spurs as well, as maybe Sturridge-Kane partnership. But
I mean, talking there about a player whose manager's built a system that doesn't need them anymore, that also sounds like Wayne Rooney at Man United, Ollie.
Yeah, as Greg sort of touched upon, he's not the best attacking midfielder, he's not the best number nine, and he's not the best, sort of deeper lying midfielder. So
technically, according to the all-time charts, he's the best goal scorer, though.
Well, not quite.
Not on form, though. Not on form. But he was subbed off early against Hull. Is there a chance that he might even be in the starting 11 to take on Liverpool?
He actually played quite well, to be fair to him, last weekend, albeit it was against Reading in the Cup. But I don't think there's a need to sort of shoehorn him into the team for a game of this magnitude when United have been playing so well without him. I think maybe a sub where I can see him maybe, getting that goal to take him past Bobby Charlton, but I don't think he'll start.
Didn't Rooney's best performance this season was away at Bournemouth when he played wide on the left? Zlatan and Pogba, I think, was it Bournemouth or Swansea? No, Swansea. Swansea won 2-0, wasn't it? Rooney played wide on the left of a three, and he played great. So I think that's probably, you think back to Ferguson era, that was probably Rooney's best performances in Europe, always wide on the left as well. So we've been trying to convert him into this Paul Scholes figure, and he's never been that. He's never going to be that. So.
Mourinho used him out wide in the second half of the Manchester derby as well. So maybe that could be a big game plan. He's an advanced version of Lingard, maybe. Yeah, we'll have to see.
Definitely.
Have to see this weekend on Sunday. Do check that out. Another game on Sunday preceding the other clash between Merseyside and Manchester is Everton versus Manchester City. at Goodison Park. Now, Liverpool versus Man United has been a bit of a damp squib of late. I mean, it's been a bit too cagey, a bit too tactically interesting, as they say, with inverted commas. do you think that this game could be a bit of a highlight reel, though, Greg?
Yeah, possibly. City are always fun to watch for one reason or another at the moment, and Everton, likewise, you do think they sometimes they are so open, aren't they? And with Idrissa Gueye, he's not available, so that's probably going to contribute to quite an open game. So it has the potential, definitely. I think we'll all be hoping for two great games on Sunday. But yeah, you can make an argument that this one would be perhaps the more entertaining.
And I'm going to come to you on this one because I know your thoughts on the man. Is John Stones going to be the source of some of the entertainment in this game, James?
If he plays, absolutely, because we've massively focused on his ball playing abilities and forgot he's actually not very good.
Yeah, you're still not sure about him, are you?
No, not at all. He's not great in the air. And no matter how good you are in possession, if you play in English football, you are going to have to head a ball and tackle players. Mm. He makes way too many mistakes. We've just overestimated him so much because we need another generation via Ferdinand to take his place in the England team. We've fast-tracked him. And Pep's obviously not 100% sure on him now either. So
that's a good point, actually. He hasn't been in the starting lineup too often of late. And in some ways, City have improved. They've kind of gone to a bit more of a basic back four. That they still don't look like the best defence in the world, but is there a sense that they're better off without John Stones at the moment, Ollie?
I don't know. I mean, I'm in two minds about John Stones. I've watched him. I watched him at the.
You've watched him come through
when Spurs beat City earlier in the season. He was very good. He completed four take-ons and he was very good on the ball. But then it always comes down to, you know, his defending.
And he's Titus Bramble moment, isn't it? Like, yeah. He's got one in him every game.
There's a lot of nods going in the room actually right now.
Bramble was like Sol Campbell levels of like brilliant for 90 minutes, and he'd have that match of the day moment and be like, oh, Bramble did it again. That's John Stones now.
I think John Stones is better than Titus Bramble.
Oh yeah, he's better than him, but he's just a better on the ball version than sort of Titus Bramble.
I don't know. I just think
a ball playing Bramble.
You look at him. There's everything there to be a top centre half. He's got the physical sort of attributes. He's quick. He's fairly strong. He's good on the ball, but he needs someone next to him telling him what to do. But
yeah, company would be
eventually.
Perfect,
yeah, company would be perfect alongside.
And yet,
him.
When they did play together, they conceded that awful goal, didn't they? They got a bit of misunderstanding. Was it against?
He's probably
Swansea?
Not even training with company. Yeah. He's like injured. Mm. So.
But again, a bit like Sturridge and Rooney, that talk of he's got it all about him. He's got the physique. He's got the ability. Just needs someone next to him. Sounds a lot like Morgan Schneiderlin, who has just moved to Everton. From Man United.
He's just in the play centre half.
No. he could feasibly start against City this weekend, I think. He's hit the registration, I think, limited to get in the squad, I think. Check on that later. But we're going to assume he has for the purpose of this podcast. Did it surprise you that he went to Everton? United missing out on what could have been a really useful player to them there?
I think it probably suits all parties, this one. I think Schneiderlin obviously wants regular football. Everton, for a club like Everton, I think he's a really great signing. And United, he never really did it, did he? I think he did have opportunities, not so much this season, but under Van Gaal, and never really took those opportunities. So I think it's not too much of a surprise that Mourinho now has settled on who he likes in that midfield. And obviously, 22 million is a decent price to get for someone who's not been playing. Mm. And Everton, often you would see in these situations, maybe that new signing starting on the bench, ease them in. But I think their need for someone in that midfield to kind of break up play and get things moving, I think, is big. So I think Schneiderlin could definitely start, yeah.
I mean, Idrissa Gueye's at AFCON, as we've already discussed. People were saying Morgan Schneiderlin could have been the new Michael Carrick, but is he actually going to be the next Gareth Barry?
Yeah, I mean, Barry's
don't
36.
Say that like a negative thing. He's a...
Yeah, well, that's not a bad thing at all. Like Greg said, I think it's a great deal for all parties. I don't think Schneiderlin was ever really of the quality Man United need him to be. If Man United want to be challenging for titles, you're not going to win it with Morgan Schneiderlin playing for you. Simple as that. But for a top between 10 and 6, he's a great player to have. Everton are a pretty long ball physical team now under Koeman. Mm. There's going to be a lot of second balls, a lot of interceptions
and
tackles.
And he played under Koeman as well at Southampton.
Yeah, it's the perfect role for him. And just a guy being really busy all around him, it just sounds like a great partnership on paper, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked a lot there about Everton, but they're clearly going to be facing Man City, who obviously go into this match as the favourites. Are rumours of their demise as title contenders been a bit exaggerated, Ollie? I mean, early this season, before they faced Spurs and lost in their first league loss of the season, they won six games on the trot in the Premier League. I'm sure that they can go on another run again. They made up an even bigger gap than the 7 points they've got behind Chelsea at the moment when Mancini was at the club. I think he came back from, was it 15, behind Man United to win the title. So surely City, with all their quality, can do this.
Yeah, they have been a lot better recently. I think last weekend as well, they absolutely blew West Ham away. It was embarrassing, really. It was like watching a Premier League team taking on a League Two team. West Ham were that bad. But City, to their credit, were outstanding on the day. They are slowly and surely getting there, but I just think, their deficiencies will be their undoing. Everyone knows that defensively they're not solid, and to win a title we need to be defensively solid. And I think that's why Chelsea are where they are, because they don't concede many. Tottenham as well are making ground because they don't concede many. Mourinho is starting to turn United into a solid team defensively. And I think as good as City are going forward, that is going to hold them back until they rectify that in the summer.
We've touched on Mourinho there and his impact on Man United. We've had a question from Elko Born on Twitter. Dutch footballer Elko Born asks, when will Pep admit his tactics aren't everything in England? What do you make of that, James?
It's probably never, which is probably why I thought City was a bigger job than a lot of people said it was when Pep took it. It's a very old squad. Didn't really buy too intelligently in the summer, I don't think.
Especially everyone, not at the back.
No, I think everyone knew fullback. They were kind of screwed on both sides and didn't buy one fullback. Just bought about three 19, 20-year-olds for the future, basically. He's not going to compromise, but it sounds like a cliche, but he hasn't had a league like this before. Maybe his first couple of seasons at Barcelona, maybe the league was maybe a little bit more competitive than you certainly see now, but Bundesliga is not a competitive league by any stretch. At a push, you get two teams in for it, but most seasons Bayern run away with it. He's never had you go away to, I don't know, Swansea or Palace or Hull. Named three rubbish teams there, but they would beat all of those. But you go away to a tricky away game and
Stoke away.
Stoke away. Where they
what day was that game technically?
But he's not had to deal with this before. I think he is too stubborn. He's never had a challenge like this before, and the way no idealist has ever succeeded hugely in the Premier League. They've always been pragmatists, haven't they? Every manager that's won the league title.
Arsene Wenger.
But even now, is he an idealist? Really, I wouldn't say he is. He's too wedded to his ideas. If anything, he proves that being stubborn to a formation. He's wedded to 4-2-3-1. No other team in Europe plays 4-2-3-1 anymore. But Wenger's still trotting it out every week. And I mean, they've been no closer to a title in 10 years.
Fair enough. You got any more words on that, Greg? Do you think that Guardiola, I mean, he had to face Osasuna and the Ingolstadts of this world in La Liga and the Bundesliga? Do you think it's a bit overplayed, the Premier League effect?
I think the Premier League's competitiveness, I think, is more at the top. I think the six teams that at the start of this season feasibly could win the league, which you don't get elsewhere. I'm not sure about the argument that the lower reach of the Premier League is stronger than the equivalents of in Spain or Germany. I think there's no way to prove that, which is a problem because those teams don't qualify for Europe.
That'd be a great article to write. Why can't we prove that?
Writing it down now. But I think if you look, for example, at Spanish clubs in the Europa League away from the top two or three, they have had great success in that competition. So I think there is strength in other leagues, but I think no league can match the Premier League's top six, top five, where it is so hard. And you've got, if you're playing five other teams twice a season, that's 10 games. That's over a quarter of your games are against teams that have a chance of winning the league, which I think is where that competitiveness comes in.
And also maybe it's the diversity of styles as well. I think even now in the Bundesliga and the Liga, there tends to be like a Spanish style, German style, whereas because we have so much money in the Premier League, we buy so many coaches from everywhere. Just seems like every other week there's a different challenge.
It's like Space Jam, isn't it, a bit?
A little bit like Space Jam. Not going to speak of Space Jam at all, actually. We're going to move on to Leicester City versus Chelsea. Maybe there's a Space Jam moment. Have Chelsea Space Jammed Leicester City? Definitely not. They've had more quality from the off. But anyway, it's going to be the reigning champions versus the champions elect at the King Power Stadium in Saturday's big game in the Premier League. Chelsea have finally been stopped after their 13-game winning streak. Spurs, the same people that did what they did to Man City, stopped them at White Hart Lane. But there's no chance that their form's going to crumble like City's did. Is there, Ollie?
No, I don't think so. I think the only issue with Chelsea, which we've been saying for a while, is if they lose Kante for a sustained period, if they lose Costa, if they lose Hazard. You know, they've got a few players that they're overly reliant on, really. Mm. And it was interesting to see Conte bring Ake back this week. You know, it sort of shows that he's perhaps not fully convinced about his options in the squad. And I think a draw or a defeat this weekend may force him into the transfer market and boost his options, really. You look at the wing-back positions, they don't really have cover for those. And central midfield possibly as well. But I think they'll be fine. You know, the game against Tottenham, sure, they would have been disappointed to lose that and, you know, to not make the record. But in some ways, it sort of relieves the pressure a little bit as well. People aren't talking about, oh, they've won this many games in a row. They can just revert back to, you know, doing what they did at the start of the run, which is, you know, bossing teams. And I expect them to do well against Leicester this week.
I mean, Leicester aren't exactly equipped to do an upset like they did at Man City, because they've lost so many players to African Cup of Nations already. I mean, Amate, Schlupp, Mahrez, Slimani, they've all headed off to Gabon. So is there any possible way they can repeat the heroics they did against Man City? I mean, Vardy's going to be there. Musa's going to be there as well. They've got the pace.
Yeah, and maybe in some ways you could argue that playing against the bigger teams actually suits Leicester, in the sense that teams like Chelsea will allow them to play that counter-attacking style. Whereas they've struggled at home, particularly against those teams that are now not giving them that space in behind, which Vardy thrived on last year. I think on Leicester it's interesting as well, the formation, because they were so wedded to 4-4-2 last season with good reason. At the start of the season they were as well, but I think the last three games have used different shapes now. They played a diamond against Middlesbrough, 4-3-3 against Everton in the Cup, and I think 4-2-3-1 against West Ham the weekend before that. So it's interesting that Ranieri is now looking for solutions in terms of system, and perhaps with those players absent, that will be at the front of his mind again this weekend.
Mm. I mean, both Chelsea and Leicester, obviously last season, this season, used the least amount of players of any other team in the Premier League. But is there a sense that the Tinker Man is back? Claudio Ranieri starting to expand the pool of players he's going to use, as Greg says, to find these new solutions to make up for the fact that the 4-4-2 is not quite cutting anymore.
I think he has to tinker now, because, like you mentioned, he's got four pretty major first team players, well, three at least, maybe not Schlupp, but going off to the African Cup of Nations. You look at Leicester's squad, I was looking at it on Wikipedia yesterday, and it's just a very weirdly assembled squad. There's
pick and mix, isn't it?
Seems to be no common thread behind either stylistically or where they've come from, like where the profile of player, the range of like transfer value they've come in from. It is a very strange amalgamation of players. As Greg mentioned very well, they've been pretty bogging at home, haven't they? Like, I remember the whole game, first game of the season, Hull just sat back and just let them have the ball, and they're not used to having the ball. And Kante, very underrated part of his game is that he's very good at recycling possession and keeping hold of the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's behind only Azpilicueta and Henderson for completed passes in the Premier League this season, Kante. So he's crucial to Chelsea, just keeping them ticking over. It might not be flashy, it might be 6-yard pass, but Drinkwater was very much the heave-ho to Vardy down the flanks player, and Kante was the one when they had the ball, the rare occasions, they ensured they kept hold of it, and Marty hasn't been able to replace that. But, I mean,
Neither's Mendy either. They have tried a few.
Yeah, he's only played about three league games,
yeah,
I think.
Injured, yeah, but yeah. But Ndidi's come in now as well.
Yeah, again, it's just throwing money at the wall, isn't it? Like, you forget all these players they have that they're not really using or utilising well. What was their last signing and success story? Maybe Slimani at a push? They didn't buy brilliantly in the summer, but they've prioritised the Champions League, and you can't blame them for that.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the Champions League, spending the summer, Claudio Ranieri after Leicester, where do you think he's going to go next? Ollie, he's won the FIFA Manager of the Year award. Do you think he'll be there next season?
Well, he's got a contract there until 2020, which if he sees out, I think that'll take him to 68 years old, which I think will probably be the last we see of him. But it depends on whether he sees that out. I can't see Leicester sacking him unless things go, you know, really disastrously in the next 6 months. But I mean, you know, he sort of waited 30 years to reach this crowning moment with Leicester. He's tried international football, didn't really work out. With Greece, he's managed, you know, some of the biggest clubs in the world. I think Leicester will probably be his last big job, unless he gets, you know, a ridiculous offer from China or something like that. I think this is probably it for him.
Fair enough. Speaking of waiting almost 30 years. I mean, I know Spurs have won some League Cups, but it's 26 years, I think, since they last won the FA Cup. They're through into the next round, the fourth round. But Pochettino takes on Tony Pulis, West Brom's Tony Pulis these days, in another big game at the weekend. He did say after that win in the FA Cup that he was a bit worried about the intensity of his players when they come up against sides that aren't Man United, Man City, and all that kind of thing. This is a battle between, you could say, two of the most awkward teams to play against in the league. Do you think that Spurs are going to have that mentality to get one over against Pulis?
Definitely. I think this is, you know, revenge on the cards, really. You know, West Brom, as you said, are a very awkward team. I think if you asked Pochettino which Premier League team would he least like to face, West Brom would certainly be up there. Spurs' record against them is absolutely dreadful recently. They've won one of their last seven league games against West Brom, drawing the last 3-1-all, including last season. And obviously, you know, everyone talks about the Battle of the Bridge as the game that Tottenham's title challenge sort of, you know, went away. But realistically, it was the weekend before when West Brom came to White Hart Lane and just did an absolute stifling job on Spurs, a rampant Spurs as well. Spurs had beaten Stoke 4-0 the previous game, looked every inch that they could go on from that and challenge for the title. West Brom came, parked the bus and just frustrated them and got a 1-1 draw. So revenge is on the cards definitely for Spurs. They need to, they've been on a great run. They've won five in a row in the league. But this is a very, very tricky, awkward game against a team that have, you know, exceeded expectations this year. They've actually, you know, they're in the top half, which if you look at their squad, you'd say they're performing above their station, really, I think. It's going to be a tough game. It'll be interesting to see how Pochettino changes his tactics. He's been doing it all season, how he changes it to counter West Brom's specific threats.
Do you think they are going to potentially trip them up again and end this nice run for Spurs, West Brom? Or do you think, having changed the formation so much this season to find what Pochettino calls these new solutions for his players, do you think they'll have enough of a plan B to take West Brom apart this time?
I think they probably will, yeah, but I can see this being a 1-0 win for Spurs, something like that. I think there won't be much in it at all.
A grinder.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those, I think. West Brom, that's what... They make it very hard for teams when they go on the road, but West Brom have actually got the best away record outside the big six this season, so...
Yeah, even though they lost, they were very good at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, they were, and they've been playing really well away from home, which you think of Pulis normally, and he's obviously accused of maybe lacking ambition at times, being overly cautious, but I think now he's got the players in Phillips and Chadley to do damage on the counter-attack, and Spurs will have to be careful at that end of the pitch as well. But I think ultimately they will have enough to break them down, yeah.
Mm. I mean, Spurs, they against Villa in the FA Cup, Villa didn't really offer much with Kadira away at the African combinations, and they'd sold Rudiger instead as well. So it's Abong Lahore leading the line. I mean, Salomon Rondon...
Just stood about.
Yeah, exactly. But Salomon Rondon's going to be leading the line for West Brom, and as Greg says, they've also got some dangerous wide threats as well. Can West Brom take advantage of Spurs here? I mean, they're going to be facing Man City next week, or Spurs, so is there any chance that they're going to be distracted by that fixture coming up?
I think they've got Matt Phillips, who's got 8 league assists this season. I think it's more than Ozil and Hazard combined in the Premier League, which is mad when you think about it, but he's been under the radar brilliant for him this season. But on the flip side, Spurs have Dele Alli, who's probably in the form of his life, and he's been linked with moves to PSG and Barcelona and Real Madrid are looking at him, and he's outdone last season. He started this season quite quietly, didn't he? Him and Eric Dier. Eric Dier's slowly but surely picking up a bit more, but he's just been phenomenal the past few weeks, hasn't he, Dele Alli? So they have a star player on the pitch, you could say. Now he's kind of covered up for the fact that Kane's still not really firing on all cylinders this season, but he's kind of just chipping in every three games or something. But, I mean, I think Spurs, they are an awkward opponent. They are tailor-made to frustrate Spurs, but I think Spurs could probably nail this one.
Over on the other side of North London, Arsenal could be travelling to face Swansea City. And we talk about Harry Kane and Dele Alli. I mean, they've got Giroud and Alexis Sanchez this season, haven't they? Are they going to be rocking up to the Liberty to do a bit of damage to Paul Clement's new start?
They've been pretty ropey, haven't they, recently, Arsenal? The last two games, the cup game against Preston, they were all at sea the first half, and they could have been two or three down, really, at half-time. Game before that was the Bournemouth one, where they were shambolic and somehow sort of pulled it back, got a 3-3 draw. They seem to be... they're not controlling games. They're starting games really slowly at the moment. And if they do that against Swansea, then they could find themselves in trouble, because they've obviously... You know, themselves got a lift. They won against Palace last week.
They've got a new manager. They've got Claude Makélélé, which is quite cool. And they're, you know, making the odd signing as well. So Swansea, perhaps looking at this, thinking if we can start well, start quickly, and get an early goal, that could unsettle Arsenal. But I think ultimately, as long as the game is sort of 0-0, Arsenal will you know, get the result in the end. I think Giroud has been under the radar, very, very good for them. His goals per minutes ratio this season is ridiculous.
Ridiculous, yeah.
So I think they'll win, but it's definitely a more awkward fixture than it would have been 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Mm. Greg, people have already written off Swansea to a large extent. People said, oh, signing Paul Clement, signing for next season, or the one they should have made in the summer rather than giving 6 months to get him out of the relegation zone. And they've signed guys like Dan Altman in the behind the scenes to do like a more stats-based approach for recruitment as well. So these sound like appointments that would sound smart in the long term, but do you think they've got enough in the short term to get themselves out of trouble? They've been linked with quite a few interesting names as well.
I think that win at Palace that they got before the FA Cup was huge, because that has given them a bit of hope. That they played really well in that game, and Palace obviously probably one of the worst teams in the division on form, so maybe there will be tougher tests to come. But I think Swansea probably have just about enough hope at the moment, but I still think it's a big ask for them. Mm. I think the recruitment will be key this month, because they didn't do that very well in the summer at all. But Clement, I think, like you say, is an appointment who you would hope would stay with them if they did go down, and perhaps they would come back stronger. So from that point of view, I think it's a pleasing appointment that they are looking for that long term again. Kind of lost that identity a little bit, Swansea, in recent years. So perhaps they're moving back to that now.
Mm. What do both sides need to do, James? Because, I mean, we talk about Swansea being at risk of dropping out of the division. Arsenal are the teams at risk of dropping out of the top four for the first time under Arsene Wenger this season. What do both teams need to do, both in this fixture and beyond, to get their like positive momentum back? Well, besides winning, obviously.
Well, interestingly, this was Bob Bradley's first game in charge as well, wasn't it? The Arsenal game, the reverse fixture. So it shows you what a mess Swansea are as a club at the moment. As Greg said, they have lost their identity. Mm. Every manager they've appointed since Brendan Rodgers has had fewer league games than their predecessor. So, I mean, Paul Clement will probably buck that trend with Bob Bradley. For Swansea, I'd say Ashley Williams, bonkers they let him go in the summer. Mm.
Because is Mamadou Sakho the answer?
I mean, completely different type of player, isn't he? He's more of a ball-playing centre-back, Mamadou Sakho. He's much better on the ball than people give him credit for, the angles he finds with passes. Whereas Ashley Williams is just clear it, get rid. But they needed that player, really, because they've got Jordi Amat. He's been pretty ropey at centre-half. They just need a strong big bloke at centre back, basically, because they're a shambles at the back, really. Fabianski's been poor this season as well, which you picked him as a top five goalkeeper in the league last season. Further forward, keep hold of Llorente, don't let him go to Chelsea if that rumour is to be believed. He's very suited to their style of play. In terms of Arsenal, I just want to see them do something other than 4-2-3-1, just if for a game, just try it out.
3-3-1-3 for Wenger.
Just please try a different Bielsa formation. We don't know what to do. He's lost me in the numbers there. But just try something different. It doesn't matter what midfield combination he picks. He's tried about 30 in the last 12 months, all with varying degrees of success. Mm. I think the Arsenal of controlling games is kind of fading away a bit now.
So maybe instead of sticking to plan A, find a plan B and then stick to that.
Yeah, Granit Xhaka is great in the odd game at dictating the play, but he hasn't done it consistently since he signed for Arsenal. He hasn't been the controller that he thought they were buying.
Is that because they're still trying to play to him as if he's Santi Cazorla, maybe?
Absolutely. Santi Cazorla, when he receives the ball and he's playing that role, plays in the centre circle. Granit Xhaka plays 10, 15 yards deeper, so they're a lot more stretched and they can't really get up the field, and it's just a bit more sideways. Santi Cazorla is their best player by far. It's not Ozil or Sanchez, it's Santi Cazorla.
Big shout. Speaking of...
Most important.
Well, most important, biggest, best, whatever. Dimitri Payet is definitely that for West Ham. And they will be hosting Crystal Palace. Big Sam's Crystal Palace, the ghost of Christmas past. I know it's not Christmas anymore. We'll go with that anyway. He's going to be returning to... Actually, he was never the manager at the London Stadium, was he? So he's his first visit as well, unless he's been there on England duty when he was manager there. We won't talk about that, though, because it ended very badly. But what we
so much
is,
to not talk about. With
so
Sam
much to not talk about. But with Bilic saying that Payet doesn't want to train, he wants out of the club, this just sounds like a absolute miserable game to watch, doesn't it? West Ham versus, as you've said, one of the worst teams in the division, Crystal Palace. It's probably not one for the purists, is it?
Maybe not, but
Morale will be down.
Yeah, and then again, the
sad faces everywhere.
The defensive records of the two clubs. It's probably not going to be great. Palace missing Zahar as well, their pirate, maybe, should we say, in terms of the creativity that he brings. So yeah, two clubs without their main man in those terms, and yeah, it's really dampened the mood further around the London Stadium. This pirate news, because he is their biggest player. Bakary Saka as well, who might have been the man to come in, is also at AFCON, so it's interesting to see what Allardyce does there. Townsend's not really done it so far this season, so I think Palace will struggle, but then again, West Ham, with the Piatt news, bound to be in a negative situation. So
we've had another shout from Twitter as well. Andrew Southwood asks, "What can we talk about West Ham stopping Payet leaving in the summer and him asking to leave? What do we make of the whole thing? Was he sold a lemon, or is his expectations been out of whack like a lot of other things with West Ham this season?
I think, well, he signed a 5-year deal, didn't he, in January or February, and he must have been given assurances that West Ham were going to make big signings and make a push for the top six this season. And then you look at the business that they've done, none of their summer signings have really come off. You know, they've had a disastrous time of it in terms of bringing players in. And I think for him, you know, after having such a good season in the Premier League, followed by the Euros, he's at the peak of his career and he's looking at it thinking, you know, I'm at a mid-table club here when I should be playing for, you know, someone a lot better. I think he has been sold down the river a little bit. I think he's possibly not going about it the right way, but it must come a point where he, you know, he's just getting frustrated by his surroundings. I mean, you look at it this season, he's created 72 chances, in the Premier League, which is...
Created the most chances
the
in
most,
Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the most. And it's 50 more than any other West Ham player, which is, well, frightening for them. And he's got 6 assists, and their next highest assist provider is Winston Reid with 2.
Wow.
Which I think shows you, if they lose Payet...
And he has not been played up top.
No, Winston Reid in the hole, I don't think would be a very good system. But yeah, it shows how important he is. They need to get his head back straight. If they're not going to sell him, they need him back in the team as soon as possible, because they're nowhere near, you know, as dangerous a side without him.
It happens with people at Bloom quite late in their careers. There's always a sense of lost time and catching up. And he's 29. He knows he's gone from playing with Pogba at the Euros to playing with Mark Noble again. So when you've gone from Mark Noble to Pogba, it's like, oh, that's a nice story. But then when you go from Pogba back to Mark Noble every week, it's a bit like...
Playing with a man who was at the Euros to a man who should have been at the Euros.
But I mean, 6 years ago when he was at St Etienne, tried to force through a move to PSG. He did it at Lille, did it at Marseille. He forced through a move to West Ham. So this is a career common thread that he wants to do this. I think he'd be great for Man United. I know a lot of people would disagree with that, but Man United need to stop playing centre forwards out wide and maybe put a winger out wide.
I think Hull should make a bid for Payet of $3 million.
Wow.
3.49 million.
Yeah, return the Snodgrass bid that West Ham somehow thought they were gonna land Hull star man for.
I like it a lot. We're going to move on quickly now just through the rest of the Premier League fixtures this weekend. Watford take on Middlesbrough in a battle between 14th and 16th, with Middlesbrough almost stepping into the niche Watford looked like they were taking on in terms of like suddenly buying loads of players in January, or at least being linked with loads. They've already signed Gestede, and there should be more on the way as well, kind of bringing back ideas of Janinho in that era, maybe.
Middlesbrough have signed more players this season than they've scored goals in the league from open play.
There you go.
So it's
a battle of not so much the big spenders, but the quantity merchants in the transfer market between Watford and Middlesbrough. So maybe one to look out for. Don't know if I described that very well. Moving on, Sunderland take on Stoke. Sunderland probably back to looking a bit doomed, really. They've had some good results of late, but I mean, Stoke, they've been punished by the big teams, but they've got the quality there to put Sunderland to the sword, surely. Haven't they? Nods around the room. I'll take it as a yes. Burnley, we're taking on Southampton, the team who beat Liverpool at home 1-0 in the EFL Cup. But 1 point just between them. How? That sounds ludicrous. How good Burnley are doing and just how close they are to the teams pushing to try and get in that top six spot. Really great work by Sean Dyche this season. Be very interested to see how they do, because surely they're going to stay up this year. Surely. And then Hull versus Bournemouth. No fit defenders, I think, still for Hull. Going off what happened in midweek in the EFL Cup. I mean, Curtis Davis was out. Dawson was out as well. And considering that Bournemouth have scored 6-2 in the league, could be a bit of a massacre, although they were beaten by Millwall at the Den 3-0 with a heavily rotated team. But then if they're heavily rotated, sounds like their first 11 are going to be back in the team to face Hull. Bad times indeed for the team that got rid of poor old Mike Phelan. Poor old Mike Phelan, now on the punditry sofa.
His punditry appearance on Sky, it was a bit like... He said it was the only way he could get a ticket to the game. It was like your heart bled for the guy. It's like
he's such a lovely man.
He'd been sacked
as well.
By one. He was previously let go by the other after like 20 years of service. It was just, it's like having two ex-girlfriends paraded in front of you. Was, no one wants you anymore, Mike.
Well, speaking of rejection, we've now got a round of Would You Rather. I'm going to ask you each a question. We've got one from Twitter as well, a little bit of a special one. I want basically A or B. Which one would you like the most? You can take this one however you mean it, but would you rather Jurgen Klopp or Jose Mourinho as a manager, as someone to manage your team, however you want it, Ollie?
Probably just go for Klopp, just because of his style of play.
James?
Jurgen Klopp, hands down, is just a nicer person.
Wow. There's something to unpack, but not on this pod. Greg, what are we going with?
Yeah, it's a hat-trick for Klopp. Yep, I'm going with him as well.
Gagan Podding, very good. next question. This is a John Terry themed question. On the bench for Chelsea or starting for Swansea? There was rumours he was going to join Swansea with Harry Redknapp if he would have taken over. But I think they are persisting with this idea that he might go. What do you reckon, Ollie?
Linked with Bournemouth as well, I think.
Bournemouth as well?
I think, no, just stay on the bench. Try and get another Premier League medal. There's no point in him going to a relegation side, is there? Just stay at Chelsea.
If you're John Terry, you're going to be joining Jack Wilshere at Bournemouth, James?
If I'm John Terry, I'm sitting on the bench. If I'm me, I'm playing for Swansea and getting relegated.
So if we have a kind of a being John Malkovich type thing where you go through the tunnel and take over John Terry's body, what are you going
to
do?
I'd move him to Swansea and play football.
Very good. Greg, what about yourself?
No, I'd stay on the bench, I think, because it's Terry. He's been at Chelsea so long, just as we've said.
He bleeds
blue. Another medal there, that'll do. Stay on the bench.
Very nice. Infantino or Blatter? Separates the men from the boys.
Do we have to choose one?
You do.
we haven't seen the full horror of Infantino yet, so probably just him.
Yeah. James?
I mean, the 48 team World Cup is it's genuinely ruined the best football competition, best sports competition in the world.
You've seen it yet, you know it's ruined it.
All the federations voted for it unanimously. Of course they did, because we're going to benefit from the profits of it. But he's ruined more than Blatter the World Cup. Blatter was very corrupt, but football has always been corrupt. It's hard to go with, isn't it? I'll go with him.
It's like, do you want Trump or Putin?
Yeah. Ooh, that is pretty much it. But I don't know which one's weird. I'd probably go with Infantino by the smallest amount, only because he's had less time to be corrupt so far.
So you're banking on potential there for even worse to come. Yeah. Infantino or Blatter, Greg?
I'm going to go for Blatter, I think.
Oh, old school.
If you,
better the devil you know.
Yeah, the corruption obviously inexcusable, but I think he got a better balance between growing the game worldwide and keeping the World Cup to 32. So.
A fourth question from Vikash Patel on Twitter. Keep or scrap the January transfer window, and why, Ollie?
I would keep it because I think if you had it for the whole season, it would just make everything just really messy. It's this Pirates situation. Imagine that happens in October or even at the end of the season. I just think it condenses it all, and it's fairly exciting, I guess, the end of the window. So I'd probably keep it.
What you're saying, it's good for content.
Yeah, exactly.
James, are you going to keep or scrap the January transfer window?
I'd keep the January one, definitely, in its current format. I think it's as fair as you can be.
Are you going to scrap the summer one?
No, I'd end the summer one before the season starts.
Ah, okay.
I think the way it stretched on 3 weeks since the season's a bit unfair.
I was going to say, if you just scrapped the summer window, then how could you have a second window?
Just all transfers.
The window's
always
open, but it was always open. Quiet.
But the January one, I mean, it emphasises that coaches who are good at coaching have more time to work with their players. They have to bother with less stuff like the pie things being thrown curveball every other
pie
week.
Pie on their face.
Yeah.
Greg, would you keep or get rid of the January transfer window?
I would keep it as well, yeah. I think I'd actually, going back to the other question, I'd probably vote James ahead of Blatter and Infantino with that proposal, because
Got promotion, mate, you're ahead
my
of FIFA.
First vote.
I think the summer window, it probably should finish before the season starts if there's a way of doing that around Europe. So, yeah, James, you got my vote.
Yeah, well, you've got your agenda there, mate. You better.
It's all got to start somewhere, isn't it?
It does. We're moving towards the end of the pod now, very rapidly. I want you to all pick one fixture from around Europe, not in the Premier League, and tell us why our listeners should watch it this weekend. Ollie?
I'm going to go with Sevilla v Real Madrid in La Liga. It's second v first. Obviously, Barcelona have started a bit recently. Real Madrid are just
you know, winning games weekly. They're just grinding out results here and there. And Sevilla are one of the most sort of interesting, exciting teams to watch in Spain. And, you know, they've really come on under Jorge Sampaoli. Under Emery, they're a cup team, but they've sort of taken that next step now and done it consistently in the league. So potential banana skin for Real Madrid. Sevilla, if they win that, perhaps open up the door for Barcelona to come back into it.
Thrills and spills either way. James, what is the match you're looking forward to?
It is in Europe, technically. I think it's in the US, but it's a friendly.
we'll allow it.
It's two European teams. It's a friendly between RB Leipzig and Rangers. In Washington, I think it is. There's a Bayer Leverkusen and Atletico Mineiro played last night. But I think that just seems like a... It's a typical football manager pre-season friendly if you're RB Leipzig. I'll go away at Rangers, see what the boys can do there.
Fair enough. Greg, what's your match from around the world? Has to be on Earth, though. That's the only stipulation.
Really. All right. Well, I'll quickly change my answer then. I'm going for Fiorentina against Juventus in Serie A. Two big rivals. Everyone's a rival with Juventus in Italy, really. But Fiorentina, one of the biggest, definitely. Juve 4 points clear at the top, but a game in hand. So you think if they keep winning these type of games away in Florence, then the title's theirs. But Fiorentina just very inconsistent and frustrating, but so good to watch on their day. Josip Iličić is probably my favourite player in the history of the game, I think. He's a kind of 6'4" playmaker. It's unbelievable when you watch him. So worth it for that alone.
Do you think Bastute will be there with a half and half scarf? Or?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. That would go down well, I'm sure. Baggio as well, they'll love it.
Ooh, yeah, maybe not, maybe not. Just a quick shout about European football. We've had a tweet from Rasa Tweets asking, Barca struggles, overall silverware chances, it's not looking good for Luis Enrique.
In La Liga, no. Real Madrid under Zidane are just a sort of winning machine. I can't see them really slipping up. Looking at their squad depth as well, if they lose a couple of players, they can pretty much just slot James Rodriguez in or Isco or... You know, they've got a very, very strong squad. I think their lead at the top is probably too much. But Champions League, why not? You know, they've got a ridiculous front three. They've got a very strong side. And I think the further La Liga sort of gets away from them, they can just put all their eggs in that basket and go for it.
Leicester-esque.
Yeah, I mean, they can win the Champions League. They could, you know, they've easily got the squad to do it. So why not?
Do you think if Luis Enrique can pull some glory out this season, it'll go out on a high or leave? He has talked about stepping away.
Yeah, I could see that happening if they were to win the Champions League again. Yeah, I think he might.
Fair enough. We're going to move on to our second class section now, very quickly. AFCON is starting this weekend. I want to know the team you're tipping to win it, basically, and why. Ollie?
I'm going to go with Senegal, just based on having quickly looked at all the squads before. I just think
you're an avid watcher. So,
I just think they've got the strongest spine. You know, you look at their defence. They've got Koulibaly of Napoli, who's obviously one of Europe's best defenders at the moment. And they've got Kara at Anderlecht. In midfield, they've got Kouyaté and Idrissa Gueye. And up front, they've got Sadio Mane on one wing. They've got Balde Keita, the Lazio forward. They've got Mame Diouf. They've got Moussa Sow. So they've got a very strong squad sort of covering all areas. So I think I'd probably just tip them ahead of Ivory Coast. Maybe Ghana and Algeria will probably be in there as well.
And they do have a quite proud history of surprising results in international football as well. So. Greg, who are the team you're tipping in the AFCON 2017?
Well, I'm going to go for Algeria, I think, who are in Senegal's group, so that could be a really interesting early fixture. I think Senegal do have that balance, but I think Algeria do as well. They tend to play quite a conservative game, but they have got the attackers up front. Mahrez, one of the stand-up players in the tournament, to do damage at the other end. So I think they have a good balance as well. So I'm going for Algeria.
Nice. And James, what's the team you're looking forward to? Or looking to win it at AFCON?
Egypt, so I'm going to go with. The Germany of African football. They could be in a disarray and they'll still reach the last four.
Won it seven times more than anybody else.
Got Mohamed Salah as well. They've got Mohamed Salah, who's probably the most informed player at the tournament,
yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, I remember you say Jovinho is the Messi of Africa. Going to this tournament... I mean, Salah looks that good in Serie A at the moment. He looks absolutely unstoppable.
Who said that about Jovinho?
Oh, it was years ago.
You know, Jovinho, I think.
You know when people said Shaqiri was the Alpine Messi? It was one of those. It wasn't good. We won't go back there.
That's a bad comparison.
We'll move on. We've got Squawker Versus now. It's a fight to the... Not to the death, but it's a fight to the quiz between our external guest, Greg Lee, and Ollie Young-Miles. He's going to be batting for the home team. So I have three questions here. One of them is multiple choice, so, you know, do wait for when I tell you that's one. But we're going to kick off. For some reason, the bells and whistles, the literal bells and whistles, have disappeared. So we're going to have to go with the old school, hand in the air. Whoever goes first, I'll come to you first. So first question, who is the top scorer in games between Manchester United and Liverpool of the modern era? So we'll say since the start of the 90s. Greg?
Rooney.
It's not Rooney. Ollie? I'm going to have to hurry you.
I can't even think of anyone. Robbie Fowler.
Steven Gerrard with 9. Which is it's a joint record. We're going to go on to question 2 now. One midfielder has made more interceptions than N'Golo Kante since he moved to Chelsea. Who is that midfielder in the Premier League, I must say? Ollie.
Interesting guy?
It's not. Oh. It's not. Greg? I'm going to have to hurry you.
Yeah. I don't know. Pass.
It's Ander Herrera.
Oh. Mm.
This is the multiple choice question. This is a team question, by the way. Who has conceded the fewest amount of goals per game in Europe's top 5 leagues this season? I've got 5 options for you. Is it Bayern Munich, Nice, Tottenham Hotspur, Villarreal, or Juventus? Come on, I need an answer.
Oh, Tottenham. Yeah. Let's go Tottenham.
Wrong.
Nice?
It's not. It's Bayern Munich. They have only conceded 0.56 per game. What a anti-climax to the quiz.
Should have made it that, Greg.
So that's a 0-0 draw. What a terrible result. Anyway, join us next week for another wonderful Monday podcast with Nick English. He's going to be rounding up the weekend's action. We've also got a very, very interesting football IQ discussion with George Ellick about how to win the January transfer window. Do look out for that. And check out squawker.com for all our usual analysis, news, features, and all the rest of it. Ollie, thank you for coming on.
Cheers, Greg. Been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you on. James, thank you for coming on once again.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Greg, it's been a pleasure to have you on as well in your debut for the Squawker Talker. Anything you want to be plugging to our listeners this week?
Not particularly. No, you put me on the spot there a bit, but can't think of anything.
Where can we find your work?
You can follow me on Twitter at @GredLeeFootball. Lee is spelled L-E-A, which is often people get wrong, but understandable.
Not like Bruce.
No. Yeah, so that's where you'll find me.
Beautiful. Do check it out. And join us again soon for another Squawker Talker podcast. And thanks for listening.